This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's STIRLINGsoap.com.
Stretch by Torres, the set, the kick, and the pitch. It's deep to left field. This one may be off the wall, maybe in the screen.
Lang and Chernyshev on top as expected. They're eligible for Salt Lake City.
To Indian All-Star.
Well, Bill Black here with the Indian All-Stars podcast, and today it is my distinct honor to speak with George Jones, hockey historian and the nephew of our featured Indian All-Star, Clarence Taffy Abel. The first Native American to play in the Winter Olympics. I won't go into much detail about that. I'll let George share all that information. But all that to say, welcome, George. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, glad to be with you, Bill. And anytime I get a chance to spread the word about a Native American in hockey, I do it because there haven't been that many of them. Especially when the man is my uncle. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it really, when you called me the other day, and I have to tell everybody, you called me kind of out of the blue. I was blown away. So thanks for that. I mean, that was really cool.
Sure.
I would have loved to talk to you more, but I was just all kind of flabbergasted and taken off guard. So I didn't, if it felt like I was kind of stilted in my conversation, I apologize for that, because I was like, wow, calling me.
That's the way that people make connections. Sometimes it's with a lot of pre-planning, sometimes no planning. So
sure. Well, yeah. Again, thanks. So now let's talk about Clarence Taffy Abel.
Okay.
Was a member of the very first United States hockey team at the very, very first Winter Olympics in 1924.
Right.
Based on your knowledge and your family history and everything, how did he get to that point?
Well, he started off at an early age playing hockey. I mean, the earliest photo that I have of my uncle playing hockey is in a person's backyard in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. And he was about 15 at the time. And he was born in 1900, so I can add that was in 1915. And from there, he played amateur hockey with some teams in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. There's Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, then right across the river, the St. Mary's River, there's Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada. So there was always, you know, great rivalry between, you know, the Canadian Sioux is what they called it, and the American Sioux. So, and I can say this, you know, my uncle, his arch foe was Canadian hockey players, because they had an elitist type of attitude, and Taffy knew that he was every bit as good as the best of the best of the Canadian hockey players. So I think that put some of his competitive spirit together, along with his, you know, what I call an X factor, that Native American spirit to win. And he certainly had that. There have been three Native American, U.S. born Native Americans in the Winter Olympics. Taffy was the first, from Michigan. Then there was Henry Bucha, and the last one, T.J. Oshie, with the Washington Capitals. So
yeah,
they're all Ojibwe, all Ojibwe.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I noticed that as well.
Yeah, so that's something right there, and so Taffy, he was light complected. His father, a white person, his mother was Ojibwe. So he was light enough to pass as a white. And this was during the time that, you know, officials were knocking on parents' door and say, "Do you have any children we can take away to an Indian boarding school?"
Right.
So, to best of my knowledge, Taffy had to start passing as a white person about 1905 to avoid the Indian boarding schools. And he did that, and certainly had to pass as a white to get into the Olympics in 1924. Then the NHL in 1926. And family and close friends knew he was Native. The thing is, at that time, if you were deep into not disclosing your Native ancestry, you kept it a secret.
Yeah, definitely was not the cool thing to be Native American at that time.
And I just finished a book about Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who was a U.S. senator, still living.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about his father and Ben, how they had to early on pass as white.
Wow.
So, I know it affected my uncle, because he didn't disclose until his mother passed away in 1939 that he was indigenous.
So he was obviously pretty connected to that, even though they had to keep it under the rug, as it were, right? He was very connected because he felt so strongly to bring that out at that time. My grandfather was part of the residential school thing that came and hauled him off four times to Chemawa School down in Oregon from here in North Central Washington. And he ran away after the fourth time. They gave up and didn't come looking for him again. But so I have a little bit of understanding. He never spoke to me about that experience, but he wanted to come home. So I feel that a bit.
Some of this I learned firsthand from my uncle while he was living. My first remembrance of my uncle was in 1954, when I was 4 or 5 years old, until he passed away in 1964. So it would come up at times, but me being a young child, you didn't get that heavy into it, but I knew it was out there.
Sure.
And, a great deal of despair and, sadness resulted from it, but Taffy had to play from that. So he got into the Olympics. He was actually playing pretty heavy duty amateur hockey in Minneapolis and St. Paul in 1923-24 when he got recruited into the Winter Olympics. And certainly he didn't tell the guy that recruited him, hey, I'm native and welcome to it. But Taffy was so poor at the time, he about didn't get to the Olympics. So friends and other people had to give him money or donate. And he got there and they went to training in Boston before they went to New York and sailed to France for that. So I found out one of the companies that Warren Buffett owns right now, Spalding, they would make, clothing and other stuff. Actually, that company donated the uniforms and other, and skates, I think, that year for them to go to the Olympics. Because I talked to an archivist at the company. Yeah. So wow. They did that. So they sailed. I went back and tracked down some photos of actually when Taffy and his teammates were on the ship heading to France. And he wrote home saying it was a very rough trip. I mean, with this, this was in the North Atlantic in the winter with the winter storms.
Yeah, so, boy, pretty rough stuff. What was his mindset like going? He probably hadn't traveled very much.
No, I mean he hadn't traveled, out of Michigan at all. So
back and forth across the river, maybe, but that's it, right?
Being on the hockey circuit in the amateur thing was pretty good, but going to Europe was
an entirely different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a big thing. So, they got to France, had a little problem getting there, with either too much snow or not enough snow in places, but the weather finally turned good. So I think, the picture that I have of my uncle, I think it was January 25th, 1924. He was the USA flag bearer. He was, leading not only the hockey team, but all the other the winter sports teams for Americans there. So that's the photo that I cherish, but You can see the snow in the center of Chamonix, France, where they were marching there. Then they took the oath for the American Olympians. I got that on a film. Wow. And said that. And yeah, so he did that. So, not only the first Native American hockey player, but the first and still only Native American USA flag bearer in either the winter or the summer Olympics. But I'm about to modify that thing and give some official credit to Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who went to the Summer Olympics in Tokyo in 1964. And on the closing ceremony, the person that was supposed to do that, the shot putter, couldn't carry the flag, so Ben carried the flag out of the stadium. And in my opinion, and this is when they wouldn't name, it was several years before they would name a person as a closing flag bearer. But Ben was in the military in Korea, and I know he carried the flag. I'm still trying to track down a photo of him carrying the flag in 1964 in Tokyo. So I would credit Ben as the second Native American flag bearer. Yeah. Sure. So I'm trying to get that done. Yeah.
So what a fabulous honor. Is that something that the U.S. Olympic Committee picks, or the team members vote for? Or do you know I don't know what that process looks like.
Yeah, it's a lot different today.
I'm sure everything is different today
than it was back in the first ever Winter Olympics in 1924. Right. All the American team members and their captains of each individual sport would select the flag bearer.
Okay.
So Taffy, I don't think he used any politicking. I think everybody liked him. He was tall, almost 6'2".
Yeah.
And he could hold the flag high.
Sure.
And he did. So that's how I think he got picked.
He was 6'2". That's a big man for 1924.
Well, it was big at the time for a hockey player. and he had the weight too. I forgot what weight he carried into the Olympics. Might have been 210. But he got in there. So the American team, so Taffy was a defenseman. His job was not to score goals, it was to prevent goals.
Okay.
But Taffy in the Olympic games played both ways. He actually, as a defenseman in the Olympic series, scored 15 goals.
Jeez.
15 goals. And did that. So the final match was the Canadians, his arch foe, right, the Canadian.
Of all people.
against the Americans. And, the Canadians pulled it off because at that time, the Canadian team was well-practiced, well-selected, but the American team, especially Taffy, gave him a rough time. I mean, Taffy, I think, cold-cocked their leading scorer within 30 seconds of the game, knocked him out.
Wow.
But he came back. Yeah. So there was blood on the ice on the American and the Canadian game. But, everybody was there watching that game. The French, where it was, were cheering on the Canadians, the French Canadians. Sure. But then the English was cheering on the Americans. But Taffy did good. Him and the American team won a silver medal in 1924. It could have been gold because I read some things that Taffy wrote about coming back, and it came back into Pittsburgh, I think, in February. And he was quoted by a Pittsburgh newspaper saying, if our team had been a little bit better trained, because they hardly had any training before they went over and practiced together, they could have pulled it off. But the organizers of the American hockey team there, the amateur team, were pretty bad, pretty bad. It was so bad that in the next Winter Olympics in 1928, the Americans didn't even field the hockey team.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how bad it was. And I kept going back and reading that one report, what Taffy said. Yeah, and it's true. And I went and researched some of the people that were involved in it. Pretty bad, pretty bad. But, Taffy did an excellent job. He came home. His hometown of Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, threw a banquet and an honor for him. And that was good.
Great.
But when he passed away in 1964, his silver medal was in his possession at the time, but sometime during the funeral or visitation, it was stolen.
No.
I've got the local police department investigating it, but I don't think they're doing a good job. And so,
if that much time's gone by, they're probably not doing that great of a job. And I don't mean to make light of it, but boy, that's a...
The thing is, Bill, I know where the medal is, I think. Mm. I know where the stolen medal is. It wound up in a collector, one of the biggest collector of Olympic medals in the world. And he's right in Orange County, California. It's in a display in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So I'm working on trying to get the FBI involved and saying, this doesn't belong in that museum. It belongs in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Because it was, for Native Americans, it has historic significance.
Sure.
I mean, know the story about Jim Thorpe and his family delay in getting his gold medals.
Right.
Now we have the silver Olympic medal of another Native American that is going through this journey of repatriation or whatever else. So,
I hope that can come to a positive outcome.
I think, just to inspire young Native American hockey players, I always remember, talking to some Olympians, who would have a conference or they would have a meeting in a school auditorium, and they would take off their gold or silver medal and they would pass it around.
Let a kid hold that for a second.
Yeah,
wow.
Let a kid
There's
hold
power
it.
In that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm still working on that. I mean, I have done my best, to get it this far about Taffy Able, about this. So this is his 100th
year, anniversary of the
or centennial
Olympics.
Anniversary of the first Native American in the Winter Olympics. And his foe at the time was the Canadians. My foe now is the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
They have really did a number on the Native American here by not recognizing him.
Right.
He literally broke the color barrier in the Winter Olympics. And he definitely broke the color barrier in 1926 with the NHL. Not only the first Indigenous player, but the first BIPOC player. Everybody was pretty white back then, pretty white, and especially hockey. Of all the major league sports today, hockey is the least diverse.
Even today,
and a lot of that goes back to the leadership of these professional sports organizations. So sad to say, but
yeah,
it happens.
Well, let's pick that up when we talk next about his NHL career and all that. Because I think that is also a very, very important part of this whole story and a part of his journey and his place in history. So I don't want to discount that. I want to give it its full breath.
Yeah. But let me segue into one thing. So Taffy did so good in the Olympics as a defenseman. And this is right when new NHL teams in the U.S. were being set up. Like Pittsburgh was being set up, definitely the New York Rangers. So somebody actually tried to recruit him in 1924, I found through research. But he didn't join the New York Rangers until 1926. Oh. And he played in their opening game on, I think it was November 16th, 1926, where that evening he broke the NHL color barrier. So his Olympic experience segued in to professional sports. And at that time, Bill, this was his profession. This was Uncle Taffy's profession, hockey was, and he was the sole breadwinner in his family. His father passed away when he was 1920. So his mother, his widowed mother, he helped provide financial support there and for his sister too.
Uh-huh.
So he was the breadwinner, and there weren't that many good paying jobs for Native Americans back in those days. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I mean, I guess
all the more reason to keep that kind of in the background a little bit, you know, your heritage and your background, because that could definitely impact that income source. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's, African Americans talk a lot about the Jim Crow era after the Civil War. Well, I'd like to reframe that discussion for Native Americans as the Jim Eagle era. Much, much discrimination and oppression against Native Americans. You know, we're talking sports, particularly in sports. In other endeavors, but a lot, which makes, Taffy's history even more relevant these days. He had a very competitive spirit. And like I mentioned, that he had to support his family, but he had that competitive spirit of winning. And I think it's a strong Native American spirit.
I would agree with that.
What he did, yeah. So it's it's kind of a hidden story of one sport here about a Native American. Yeah.
Yeah. So after all the Olympics and moving forward, how did he feel about that experience? Was that something that he was like really proud of? Did he make a big deal out of it? Or I mean, he doesn't seem,
well,
never met him, don't know all that much about him, but he doesn't seem to be like the trumpeting things to the sky kind of guy.
But
what a cool thing to have done.
He didn't, but Taffy didn't have any children. He and my Aunt Tracy didn't have children. And so now was Taffy my uncle, but he was my godfather too.
Uh-huh.
Very religious Catholic man, Taffy was. And we talked about, passing around an Olympic medal. Well, I can remember the first time I held his Olympic medal. Yeah. And, I said, boy, what it took, you know, to get this, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the last time, yeah. So I have, you know, remembrances like that, certainly of him. I have remembrance of him sitting me, because he ran a lodge after he retired from the NHL. He ran a supper club and a lodge. And I remember the first time, I think I was about 13, he sat me down in his bar, and he had a shot of whiskey there, and he said, "You want one?" I said, "Okay, I'll take one. I'll be your drinking buddy." Yeah. So, you know, there's times like that.
Sure.
I remember, but after the NHL, he mentored Bill and coached native and non-native youth in hockey until the day he died.
That's fabulous.
He had you know, charity events. You know, his lodge was right on the St. Mary's River and had fish fries and whatever else. And it was done to buy equipment for these youth hockey leagues. So he did that. There's a 4,000 seat stadium named after my uncle in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, the Taffy Able Arena there, where
That's
the
awesome.
local college plays. So, but a lot of people don't know some of the hidden history of him. You know, I do.
Sure.
I wish I knew more, but I'm learning.
Well, we'll hang on to what we have at the moment, and I think that's, thank you for sharing it. I mean, because, you know, I did a little bit of digging when I selected him for my All-Star team. But even the information that I was able to find wasn't really all that, you know, comprehensive or overly informative. It was all kind of surface stuff. So I love hearing these stories. This is fabulous.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even though it's 100 years past the Olympics, I still think that a book for both boys and girls, let's say third grade, fourth grade, when they really start to get involved in the sport, mm-hmm. might be lacrosse, might be hockey, might be basketball. But I think they need some old school Native American heroes to read about.
I 100% agree.
Yeah. So I'm trying to, you know, put something together there about somebody, you know, on a book. You know, I've never had anybody do a book before, but I know it's not impossible out there to do it. So it's, yeah. Well, so
that'll be a cool
one
project.
Of my hopes.
Yeah. But boy, just another thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
what a cool project.
I think it's a continuing process, not only for our generation, Bill, but for future generations. And I think I explained that when I first introduced myself, I am non-native
mm-hmm.
myself. My wife, three children, three grandchildren are native, though.
Okay.
And certainly with my connection with Taffy Able, I certainly have that Native American enthusiasm and spirit out there.
Sure.
You know, if it's not related by blood, it's related by pride. And so here I'm related by pride. Yeah. So and, I'm proud of that.
And we appreciate that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I've learned, you know, a little bit better appreciation of even today what Native Americans are still going through. Yeah, still going through. And, you know, it taking time, but I hope that will change too. You gotta do your best, and you gotta have that spirit of winning out there. So, yeah.
Yeah, back in the day, excuse me, of course, growing up here in the state of Washington, the Seattle area, when Brian Bosworth was all the thing, he wrote a book, and it was most of it was like sophomore drivel talk, locker room talk, talking about football.
Right.
But he had a list of his four like life tenets, or his go-to phrase kind of things. And one of them was cause change. And
yeah,
that really stuck with me. And I guess that's part of what I'm trying to do in a non-militant way, trying to,
right,
with this Indian All-Stars thing, trying to positively promote Native recognition and pride in some of these people that came from the same background as a lot of the kids in my classroom at school, right?
Right.
So
right. I think you got a good philosophy there, Bill. That's I admire what you're doing here. I really do.
Well, I appreciate
that. Yeah, it's you have to be a change agent one way or another, in doing that. Yeah. Yeah. So it's good. Yeah. So maybe I didn't get into all the technical details of what Taffy has done. And
no, we'll save that
Olympian,
for another one.
I tried to give you a feel of who the man was.
Absolutely. And fabulously. And I wanted to just touch on the Olympics, because like it is the centennial of that historic event, the first ever, and
right,
he's the first Native American, first flag bearer. What an honor. And then we can follow up with another call at down the road a little bit to talk about,
sure, anytime
his NHL want. Career and after.
Yeah that sounds good. Yeah,
all right, George. Well, again, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it. It's been fascinating to talk to you, and I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, you did a good job with me, Bill, as an amateur. So,
all right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Yeah.
Absolutely. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Bye. You too. Bye.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.